Good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and we have an amazing show for you today. We have all of our guests on. One of them just joined us, so I'm so excited. Please support the show. Please go ahead and share the live. Let your friends know that we are live on the Roundtable, and friends, do not let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. Our guests are wonderful people, and they're here to share their stories. We have people calling in from New York, from Jamaica, from all over the country, and they are here to help you. So be sure to support them. Our first guest is Dionne Morrison. Dionne is a business strategy expert. She shows clients how to create businesses that are not dependent on you as the business owner. Good morning, Dionne. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. And you're coming all the way from Jamaica. Is that correct?
Yes, I am in Kingston right now.
Yes, we want to hear a little bit about your story and how you wound up in Kingston, since that is not where you typically are. Our next guest is Scott Churchson. Scott was giving us a little preview of all the hair he has on the top of his head earlier before the show. It's right there. It's growing. Scott was a financial advisor before moving into the entertainment industry. So he's going to talk a little bit about how all of this, the coronavirus, COVID-19, is affecting him and affecting entertainment. Our next guest is Gretchen Asher. Gretchen is a senior change management consultant. So she'll be able to talk to us about how we can handle what's going on in this time. Good morning, Gretchen. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm great. We have a nice sunny day in Seattle, finally.
Yes, I appreciate the finally, because when you said Seattle, I was like, I thought all it did was rain out there.
My thought.
In the winter, yeah.
Okay. Well, I love your backdrop. What's in the backdrop, the background?
I think this is New York City.
Okay.
The backdrop.
That's good. I love it. For some reason, I kind of thought it was Israel or something. Like, I saw the small the building. That's what I thought it was.
I travel around the world behind myself.
I love it. Is that one of those let your imaginations just go type things?
Yes. Amazon.com is my mothership. So that's where I got my backdrop.
Everybody's.
Interesting. I don't know. Like, since this show started, I've just fell in love with backdrops. Our next guest is Jeanette. Jeanette Paxia is a professional speaker. She's an author, and she's a coach for America's caretakers. And you know what? I think right now our caretakers are part of the first responders who are on the front line helping everyone else. Good morning, Jeanette. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for having me, Sharifa.
You are so welcome. I've been sitting here trying to read your background.
I'm guessing here.
Yeah, see, I knew that's what it says. I saw change and I saw a world. And I'm like, that must say, be the change you wish to see in the world. So I think that's beautiful.
Thank you.
You are so welcome. And we got our last guest, our next guest, Mrs. Monica Eaton, on the show. She is live with us. Monica is the COO and co-founder of Chargebacks 911, as well as CIO at Global Risk Technologies. Good morning, Monica. You're looking beautiful this morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Sorry for the technical difficulties, but great to be here.
No need to apologize. At least we got you at the top of the show as opposed to 45 minutes in. So it's good to see your face and your smile.
Thanks.
Now, I want to go back to Dionne, because before the show, we were talking a little bit, and you were talking about how you wound up in Kingston, Jamaica. Can you tell us a little bit about that, how that happened, and how it affected you?
Oh, yes. Actually, I am originally from here, Kingston, and my parents are here. And so I am in Fort Lauderdale, which is like an hour and a half, an hour and 40 minutes flight to here. And so once my husband recognized that this was going to be a plague of sorts, he said, okay, we're going to have to do something, because we can't leave your parents stranded. We can't leave my parents stranded. And this is what we're going to do. And so I came just before the closing off, and I have been here ever since, except I am unable to see my friends. But it's been great so far.
Okay. That was interesting. One of the things that you mentioned is that your husband is with his parents and you are with your parents. So you're there taking care of them and he's there taking care of his family. How is that for you? How is that working out for you?
Well, it's been going great because we spend a lot of time talking via Skype and WhatsApp. So all these technologies have been a real savior. But not only that, we were having a business discussion as it relates to how business owners can use technology in the same way how we are using technology. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of them do not have the infrastructure. But as we are in an age where technology is so advanced, there is no reason as to why businesses should be having so much struggle in this time. I believe that we should look at the opportunities and try to move beyond what is happening and try to save our businesses, so to speak.
What was a typical day like for you prior to COVID-19 and prior to your move to Jamaica?
Prior to this, I was always helping retailers to make e-commerce sale, to look on business strategy, to see how they can grow. And now that this has started, what I have been doing is just helping them to get payment solutions going. And so for a lot of people who did not have e-commerce infrastructure set up, I have told them that there is Facebook Pay, they can use WhatsApp, they can use banking technology, you know, to transfer money to accounts. And these are small retailers I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And of course, they can easily use delivery services as like a curbside pickup. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a local area, they can just do free local delivery just to help their customers get through. Because when all this is over, people are going to remember those who helped them when they really needed help.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm just curious, you mentioned Facebook Pay and you mentioned another aspect. Why not go for just a merchant services like your Stripes or your Squares?
Well, Stripe, I have personal experience with Stripe. I know that Stripe does work, but for many people, they do not have that infrastructure. And especially here on the island, Stripe is not available here. Mm-hmm. That is the thing. If you have a website that, you know, you incorporate with WooCommerce or some other technology, and you have access to a US bank account, you know, with all the regulations that come to set up a US bank account, then by all means, you can go ahead and use Stripe. But if you are in one of the islands that Stripe does not work within that context, then it's going to be hard because the banking industry have monopolized the system and it is very expensive. And so the fees that they are charging, a lot of small businesses cannot afford those fees. And so the easiest thing for them to do is like a Facebook Pay or bank transfers, because then it's kind of risky to have customers facing you to pay you by cash. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people would have perhaps been closed by now or are on the verge of closure, and they are wondering what their next steps are. And this has been my advice to them.
Mm-hmm. Your advice to them is to look for alternative payment options. Now, I want to ask Scott, because one of the things, again, that I mentioned is that you were a financial advisor. You were someone who was in the financial industry. When did you stop working in the financial industry?
I walked away from the financial field literally 10 years ago. Okay. It started really around April initially, then really trickled off in June of 2010. Mm-hmm. So it's been a full 10 years right now. I dealt with the aftermath of September 11th and the mortgage industry, predominantly from the middle and lower class aspect of it, not from the upper class. You know, the average people putting money into the 401k, the people that can do $25, $50 a month, not the people that had $5 million lying around and get 750 telemarketing calls a day asking for their money.
Right.
So I dealt with that. Really was all the people that nobody ever dealt with. So, mm-hmm.
So you said 2010. So that was immediately after the recession of 2008, 2009. So was that the economic turn part of what made you decide to walk away?
It really wasn't. We, believe it or not, we actually saw the entire mortgage crisis happening in 2004. We knew years in advance it was going to happen, because you're dealing with so many people getting excited about low interest rates. You know, the mortgage, if you remember at that point, every mortgage was adjustable rate, balloon payments. People shop on interest rate, not on overall payment, overall amount. And as a result, they look at it from the standpoint, we had a saying in there, we mentioned before the show, we're going to do a lot of cliches. Here's going to be another one. People spend money emotionally, then rationalize it logically. Mm-hmm. So people will look at it from the standpoint of, I can get this house, I can get what I always wanted, you know, and 3 years from now, you know, we'll be in a better place. I'll have, you know, basically I'll get more money at work. We may have a different job. We'll figure it out then, but we really want now. So that, as a result, when people had a 2%, you know, APR on their mortgage, kicking up to 9, 10, 13, 15%, which I saw, people couldn't afford it, houses foreclosed, and obviously everything happened in 2007, 2008. But yeah, we saw that in 2004. Coming back to your point, and I apologize, I went a little off topic. No, the reason I left was really because I was doing 80 hours a week. It was high. I like teaching, but I hate sales. Mm-hmm. I hated going in front of the room every Monday in front of 60 other salespeople, write down my numbers, what I did, what my team did, and be ostracized if my numbers were not up to par. And that kind of feeling made me miserable and put me in a position where I had to close people on business that honestly was not the best thing for them. And it's always been something I kind of regretted. And 2010, a couple of things ended up happening. And I'm like, all right, you know what? I think maybe it's time to get out.
Mm-hmm. So why entertainment then?
I'd always wanted to. Ironically mm-hmm. enough, I'd always kind of wanted to have an IMDb page. So I started off initially just honestly doing low end, like background work, you know, mm-hmm. blur number 17 in the background walking by.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
First gig was 10 years ago at the end of this month for a show that lasted 13 episodes called Lights Out that nobody remembers at this point. Mm-hmm. But it started things off and I started to build from there. Was up until recently covering the XFL on cable. For the Game Plus cable network, which of course the XFL is gone now after 5 weeks because of COVID. But I mean, I've been focusing more on the entertainment side because I've always wanted to. I've always kind of had that kind of persona in me. And it's a lot more fun than honestly selling life insurance, you got to admit.
Yes. I mean, selling life insurance is not one of those things I'm like, ooh, I'm just so excited to do. So I completely understand. But you mentioned the XFL, and I actually saw the articles about, you know, it's no longer, it doesn't exist. So what do you do now? How do you transition and go from this is where you are to this is the new norm for you?
I was fortunate because I was also covering like the ACC and the Patriot League. So the Patriot League is Division III football, well, the FCS, where it's like the Georgetowns, the Fordhams, you know, smaller schools like that. So I was already doing that when XFL, you know, came into the picture. So I really haven't lost too much there, but the XFL was a step up because it was a bunch of guys who either never got their shot in the NFL, you know, missed their opportunity, had a chance to rebound, and could make a living playing in front of a national audience. So they had that feeling of gratitude, which resonated with a lot of people like us. And was a huge disappointment when everything happened because it was going well. It was doing, you know, it was drawing 1 million, 2 million people, you know, on like Fox and ABC. And then just like that, psh, gone. Mm-hmm. And the XFL is a memory just like it was 20 years ago. But now I think a little more out of sympathy. 20 years ago, it was kind of a laughingstock. But we'll get through it. So I will go back to the ACC. I will go back to the Patriot League. I'll go back to all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Assuming, knock on wood, we're past all of this and football starts up again.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you. XFL, now your explanation sounded to me like, and I'm not a huge football follower, it sounded to me like it's the farm team. Can people from XFL, if it were still in operation, be then scouted for NFL?
It was. There have been players, I'm going to mention like PJ Walker, for example, who ended up getting jobs in the NFL because of what they did in the XFL. It was for players, like I said, that never quite measured up, or maybe an injury happened or some sort of circumstance that kept them from being able to accomplish the goals that they had wanted. The XFL was a chance for people to see them in action, see how they perform, make a living at it, you know, $250,000 a year that you can pull off and survive on. And like I said, play in front of a national stage, which is being watched by all the NFL teams and all the scouts who pay very close attention to see these players to see if they're worth signing for next season. So yeah, in a manner of speaking, it was a farm league.
Sweet. Now I understand.
Yes. And you guys, I mean, you guys had the Dragons out there for all of five games.
Yeah, and I saw a commercial recently for the Dragons, and I asked my husband, like, do we need another football team? What is this?
You lost a basketball team. You're getting a hockey team up there.
Right.
But it was, like I said, it was, we called it blue collar football in the office. So it was a bunch of guys who were just happy to be there, taking selfies in the stands, sometimes drinking beer on the sidelines. But that resonated with the blue collar audience, and it worked.
Have you started like a podcast or anything like that during this time, Scott? You're funny. I'm just saying, like, I'm over here just entertained.
Thank you. We had a podcast for the XFL, but my wife and I have a production company. So we have two things in the pipeline right now. A lot of my time is also spent in the editing side of it. So editing a lot of those projects, I've got some other things in the works right now through the production company. So I'm not sitting bored. You know, there is enough things for me to do, but it's different, I guess we'll say.
Mm-hmm. Now you talked about your projects. One of the things that we've been talking about on the show is that many people, especially the creatives, have seen an uprising in like this incubation period where all of a sudden all these ideas. I had a lady who said she wrote a script. You know, she hasn't been able to write for years, but over the last month, she's written a script that she's always dreamed of doing. Is that part of what you're going through?
Very much so. My wife has a script she's tweaking and working that. Maybe like 2021, we're probably going to go with that one. But we have a couple of small things that we're doing literally out of the basement because it's all we can really work with right now. So we have some short films there. We've got some ideas that just kind of percolate. Once everything is said and done, we have a couple of pilots that are going to be shopped around as well. And I think they're going to really sell a shot, knock on wood again. But we have some things like that. So again, we're not bored. You know, we're not sitting there just, you know, glued to the TV all day long. We're taking next steps the best we can. You know, fortunately for me, in this particular case, when all this happened, I'd already requalified for health insurance or SAG. My wife works per diem, so health insurance is a huge part of this. So I'd already requalified for health insurance through SAG when all of this stopped. But the issue is a lot of people lost their health insurance because they're not going to qualify for it. Kind of sucks. SAG's system on that, I personally have never been fond of. But, you know, like I said, take the wins where you can get them.
Well, that sounds to me like a whole new show. We're going to have you back and we can talk about that in detail. AskSharifa.com. Jeanette, I want to talk to you a little bit because one of the industries that I've seen affected more than anyone else is the motivational speakers, the coaches, the people who are in that industry, mainly because before this, you did all your speaking engagements out of the house. You had no choice. That's the way it was done. What has this process been like for you?
Well, a lot of the speaking events moved to a virtual world, which yesterday I had a speaking event and I've done virtual stuff and worked from home for a long time. So I'm used to it. My life hasn't changed that way very much. But it's weird because you're not interacting. I love to interact with people. Mm-hmm. And they found other ways to interact. We had little chat rooms we went into. So it was fun. You can be social distance, but it's not social. You know, you still can meet and talk to people and connect without missing that. So just finding new ways. You have to find a new way. I think that's a lot what's happening everywhere right now. Find a new way to do your business. Find a new way to help the customers. What's your why? Always, if it's helping customers, focus on that why and get out there and do that. And there's other ways to do it. It's not getting down. It's learning new ways and moving forward one step at a time.
Yes. Now you are a coach for America's Caregivers. And I was reading an article where the caregivers, for obvious reasons, is an industry that is really struggling because it's very difficult to take care of someone and remain 6 feet away from them.
It is.
What type of advice, suggestions, or recommendations do you have for the caretakers of the world?
My biggest recommendation is always self-care. You have to take care of yourself before you can take care of someone else. You've heard it probably 100 times is when you get on the airplane, if you can get on the airplane right now, you know, you have to put your oxygen on first. Mm-hmm. If you don't take care of yourself, you can take care of others, but eventually you're just going to collapse. And right now collapsing is not a good idea. Decreasing your immune system is not a good idea. So that self-care is really, really important. Mm-hmm. I was speaking to all the doctors yesterday, and a lot of them said, we don't have time. We don't have time. You know, they have a lot of patients right now. You're talking New York, and they're running from room to room. But even if you just have time to sit and take a breath before you walk into that room, mm-hmm. If you can get outside for a minute, social distancing, or just, you know, just meditate or just think of something positive. You cannot physically be sad, angry, and grateful at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you can either be grateful and happy, or you can be sad and angry. So turn to gratitude. Even in the midst of everything, there's a piece of gratitude you can find. There's something that you can find to be grateful for and focus on that. And then you cannot physically focus on the other things too.
That was beautiful. That was definitely beautiful. Have you seen an increase or decrease in the caretakers?
In caretakers needing help or caretakers being out there?
Primarily cares, actually a little bit of both.
Increase in caretakers needing help. I mean, we always, you know, when I was a nurse on the floor, we always need to take care of our caretakers. They're always busy and mostly overworked, you know, when you're working in the hospital. So it's not new for them, mm-hmm. but there's been an increase in seeing things that they're not used to seeing. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. I'm not in New York. I do have my cousins and she volunteered to go there, and I do know people that are there, but I think it's kind of like a war zone right now there, as far as seeing things that you're not used to seeing. So it's, again, focusing on the positive stories. Mm-hmm. I have also seen a lot of stories on retired medical professionals going back into the workforce to help people. People coming out, you know, even working, you know, we don't forget about, but we have to think about the grocery store workers out there, the truck drivers, mail people. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they're still out there walking around delivering our mail. I saw Amazon Prime driving around on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I was amazed. I'm like, they're on Easter Sunday. They were, you know, still out delivering. So there's a lot of us out there working and volunteering to go back into that workforce when we were out of it.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Now I want to go over to Monica. Monica, are you with us, Monica?
Yes.
Yeah, there you are. You was on the other side of my screen, so I had to find you. You are the COO, CIO. You have a couple of different companies, probably more than that, because these days we all have at least one business and 12 side hustles. So I can imagine, but I want to talk about Global Risk Technologies primarily. I looked at that, was really interested. In this day and age, with everything is going on, what are some of the strategies that you can offer businesses who are struggling right now?
So I'll tell you, we're in the payments industry and finance technology. So in terms of payments, obviously many consumers are experiencing panic. Most of us have overpurchased. We're hoarding like rolls of toilet paper. We order stuff from Amazon, right? We've overspent. And unfortunately, that's leading to a behavior that is really creating a lot of economic distress, not just for the consumers, but what's happening is many consumers are going online because there's frankly no support available from their bank. And there's mechanisms that are available to help protect consumers, like chargebacks, for example. And what we're seeing is a pretty damaging trend where consumers are starting to file chargebacks, which just means like you dispute a transaction and then you immediately get a refund. So it feels like, you know, free money. And opportunistic consumers are using this to put cash back into their bank. Unfortunately, it creates a significant amount of stress, not just for the merchant, retailers, but also specifically for financial institutions. And many financial institutions today, it's no secret, they're suffering massive backlogs of all of the follow-up that they need to do. You can imagine, you know, airlines, travel industries, online travel industries, ticketing companies. So those are the ones that we kind of already would guess, you know, they're dealing with an element of risk. So we help those merchants, but we also help the financial institutions to help manage that problem and reduce it. So something that we've actually put together, you know, one of the solutions that we provide to merchants and to banks, We receive all of the chargebacks and we help process those claims, because one of the problems with the chargeback is if it's not responded to quickly in a certain amount of time, then the consumer could be, and I, you know, I hate to like educate anybody about this, but there's a lot of issues with the way that the system is set up. Lots of loopholes, just like with any type of fraud. And I think that has been exposed with the coronavirus and the impact that it's had. So what we've looked at doing is offering temporary relief with a no contract scenario, where we can help utilize our technology to support those financial institutions, support merchants, and be able to give them the relief they need so that they can focus on what's most important for their business. And really, you know, this is helping consumers. It's helping us all. The best thing that a merchant or a bank can do is make sure that they survive this, because as consumers, we want all the luxuries to be there when this is over. We don't want any more economic damage. And, you know, we need to be able to help each other work together so that we have a more sustainable environment.
I love it. So that's what Chargebacks 911 is, your company.
Yes. So Global Risk Technologies is the parent organization. So we have locations all over, believe it or not. So I know we were just hearing about Dion moving from Jamaica. So I actually live in the UK, despite my American accent. And I came back to our Florida location, hearing about this under the same exact pretense, right? Because I wanted to be in the US, but you know, I unfortunately have to still work on UK time zones. So that's a little bit challenging. But yeah, maintaining that connectivity and really getting plugged into what's going on, especially in Europe. I mean, it's been hit so hard, but it's gained, you know, to Jeanette's point, finding time to really think about what you're grateful for, that is absolutely so key, because oftentimes, you know, we find ourselves, and being in the US with just some perspective, you know, outside of the US, we are so fortunate. We are so incredibly fortunate. We have so many different luxuries. The government is doing a lot to help us. And yeah, that really being connected has definitely helped keep things in perspective and motivated to help more.
I think this is one of those examples when, like, I tell people that I'm so happy to do the show. You know, I love my job. I love what I have the ability to do, because no one knows everything, you know, but I get to ask questions from the people who are experts in their fields. And I may be a little naive. I never knew there was even a company that was the go-between between the merchant and the banks. I thought it was just always the banks and, you know, just one conversation. So are your rates per charge, or do they pay a monthly fee?
So you know, normally that is something that we've changed as well. So, you know, in the wake of this, let's face it, you know, anybody that is in this environment today is suffering some element of risk. I think merchants are getting hit incredibly hard, because even the cash that they have in their bank is now subject to leave, because consumers aren't, and it's not like consumers are just out to steal as much as they can. Like there's a totally different perspective. It's like insanity has taken over and survival is first and foremost. We're not concerned about our credit. We're not thinking of long-term. We're just thinking of stockpile as much as possible, free up cash. There's, you know, a lot of job insecurity that's going on. So what we've done is we've created we've actually put things together so that now, whether it's a merchant or a financial institution, then we can come in, we can take over that burden for them without a contract, and then they just pay us a percentage of the funds that we recover. So that way, you know, it's not our typical business model, but I think that type of giving back and participating, you know, in helping to salvage and create some sustainability until they're on their feet, is going to really, it helps us in the long run. We want these guys to be around long term, so that we can get back into normal as soon as possible.
I love that. I love the whole aspect of the percentage, even if that doesn't last, because the tone on just about every message you hear these days is help. How can we help? How can we be of service? How can we help your business grow? And I just applaud you for doing what you do, because your business is probably one of the top businesses that are looking for me. That's what I do. I don't do fraud or anything, but I'm an online shopper. I think my debit card is magic sometimes. And when I go to sites that are, I kind of call them maybe a little risky. Like, I don't know if they've been around for a long time, or, you know, I don't know who's purchased or if they're a legitimate business. I always go, you know what? I bank with Chase. If something happens, Chase will get my money back. You know, I don't think about, you know, how it's affecting the merchant, because maybe they are a legitimate business. Maybe they're good, but I just know I will get my money back because Chase will give it to me.
Right.
Well,
no, there's
Sharifa, now you can ask Monica.
Yeah. No, there's a massive lack of education. It's like, you know, your bank gave you the money back, and it's just the bank. And it's like, well, where did it come from? Well, clearly my bank, because they have funds, and that's part of like our agreement that I'm a customer. Right. This is what they do.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe it's like a whole world behind the scenes with all these trickle down effects. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
I think that's me just being spoiled. It's like, I want my money back. I get my money back. That's just it. You know, I don't think about who it's affecting. I know it's the merchant, but if they would have followed through on the process or the product or service that I ordered, I wouldn't have to go through this whole process. So I love it. Chargebacks 911. Is that your website, chargebacks911.com?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. It's in the link. It's in the description. Please check it out, you know, so we can alleviate some of the pain that these businesses are going through. But I always do this. Like, I find the one person that on every show that I just leave for last. And I have usually like this reason, like, I'm going to talk to them last because I want to hear, after everything is said, what they're about to say. And Gretchen, you have the hot seat today. You are the one that I'm like, okay, Gretchen. Most everybody else is a business owner. They're an entrepreneur. But what you do is you're a change risk management consultant. And I'm pretty sure
management.
I think I added a risk in there. I don't know why.
But Monica and I should probably go into business together, actually.
Monica, you up for a partnership?
Sure. I think anything that you're managing today probably has some element of risk.
Yeah.
I agree. But I'm pretty sure that businesses right now are going through a lot of changes. What are some advice and strategies that you can give business owners today?
I'm a true deep-rooted corporate gal. I've been doing change management consulting for almost 3 decades. And what that is anytime, and mostly my clients are Fortune 500 and often Fortune 100 clients. Mm-hmm. And anytime a company is going through a change, whether it's a new technology system, or it's a merger and acquisition, or it's a major reorganization, you know, anytime there's a big change, I go in and I help companies understand how their employees and or customers will be impacted. And how do we move those people who will be impacted by the change from whatever the current state is to whatever the new future state is? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what change management is. And you know, I've been lucky enough to work with some great clients like Nike and General Motors and Intel and Nestle Foods and some on some really fun, fabulous projects. Mm-hmm. And what I'm doing nowadays, because of COVID-19, so many companies are now, the workers are working remotely. Mm-hmm. And I have for pretty much most of the past decade led change management teams from the US working on projects throughout Europe, throughout Asia. So I pretty much have nailed this, how to lead people remotely. So what I'm doing now, because a lot of the big companies are kind of putting these large projects just on hold for the next couple of months to see how all of this shakes out, what I'm doing now to help out is I'm doing advice videos on how to keep your projects moving forward and how to manage people remotely. Mm-hmm. So
your videos?
My videos are on my website, and that's theessentialceo.com and under free resources.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So just helping people out, because a lot of managers or supervisors and even most people aren't really accustomed to working remotely.
Mm-hmm. But some of the companies may not. Okay, when we're going through this process or transition, even though they may be able to work remote, I'm sure there were companies or business owners who said, you know what, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it through this transition. I've spoken to so many brick and mortar companies, from people who sold bread to people who were automobile representatives. Certain companies may not or may feel as if they're unable to make that transition. What are some of the tips and strategies you're able to offer them?
Well, I've talked about it in my short little videos. Really the best way to manage teams, because every company has, you know, WebEx or Skype that they use for conferencing, but they really don't use the video portion that often. I am recommending the best thing to manage, to keep a team together, keep the work going, is move to video on whatever platform your company has. Get people together, because there's such a feeling of isolation now, and people kind of go to work to take a break from home life, and then they go home to take a break from work life, and now home and work life are colliding, you know, in our homes, because kids are here, your spouse is here, and you have to figure out how to manage it. And it, like Jeanette was talking about, self-care is really important, and setting boundaries. I encourage people working remotely to be very clear, you know, with their online calendar. Let your coworkers know when you're online and when you're not online. And I'm encouraging managers and supervisors to remember to always be a little more flexible these days, because there is so much going on for their employees, taking care of kids, taking care of parents, that we have to allow a bit more flexibility, because people will be working in different shifts based on balancing home and work life all in one spot these days. Mm-hmm. And that can be—
Gretchen, if I may say, I'm sorry, I've worked from home forever. You also have to get up at a certain time. You know, people are using this time to just say, oh, I'm going to sleep in. I'm going to get up and I'm not going to get dressed. I'm going to work in my pajamas. I saw someone who said they've been in their pajamas for 2 weeks. You're not going to feel good if you don't get up and get dressed. And if you're just, you know, you have to get up at a certain time. And I mean, at least for me, I mean, it doesn't work for everybody, but get dressed, you know, act like you're actually going to work, and be ready for that. And if you have, like, I have a morning routine, if you have that, keep that going, because otherwise everything is going to get messed up and it's going to be hard to keep work routine going.
And I'm even encouraging people who are no longer commuting, you know, you've got that commute time, whether it's 15 minutes or it's an hour, keep that time. And I'm encouraging people to do something for themselves, you know, commute time, and do that writing you haven't done and you've always wanted to do. Meditate, do a quick YouTube video for a morning yoga stretch, but use that time just for you, because our days now, all aspects of our lives are colliding at the same time.
And so, I think, you know, really important. I wanted to walk back a bit on what Gretchen said. Gretchen spoke about people who are working from home. It would be important for bosses to note that workers are not tied to their computer with a ball and chain, so they have got to exercise more patience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Monica?
I was just going to say, you know, it is fascinating, but it's almost like everything has just completely flipped, because I think most of us who were going into an office actually coveted the times when we could stay at home just to get things done. Like, you had a huge pile of work and you'd be like, you know what, I'm not coming in, I'm going to stay focused, and then I'll go to the office. And now I find myself, okay, actually I'm going to go self-isolate in our office that's empty because I really do need to get stuff done. It's completely the reverse.
You have too many people at home, so you self-isolate right at the office. That's a new one. I haven't heard that one before. I like that one. Well, one of the things I've learned is that there are different levels of working from home. People who, like you said, who occasionally work from home, people who never work from home, people who always work from home. I'm in the boat with the people who always work from home. I've been working from home for years. But what was interesting is both my brother and my mother, my brother was more like you, Monica. He would work at home every now and then. And then my mother, she never worked at home. But the one thing they're complaining about, and I won't use the word, they're mentioning, let me just use the word mentioning in case mom or bro is watching, but is that there's a difference in having to check in. You know, now because of the COVID-19, they're working at home and the boss is like, check in when you get to work, check in when you leave, check in when you go to lunch, check in when you go to break, check in before your next project. And they're like, wait a minute, you know, I never did this much checking in when I was at work.
Right.
People trying to find ways to micromanage.
Yes. Yeah.
In my case, I've noticed in the New York area, the New York, New Jersey area, in my opinion, has more work to be found in the entertainment field than LA. Mm-hmm. Because of the fact, the combination of New York and New Jersey and Pennsylvania a little bit too. But what I find is a lot of it, and I think you guys have touched on it, is attitude. You know, I've seen a lot of conversations, usually from people griping on social media and Facebook, about how there's no work to be found, how there's nothing out there, there's nothing, you know, how, you know, we're in a miserable time right now. And, you know, these are the same people who never really got anything when there was work to be found. Mm-hmm. Because they made the decision at some point to be like, there's nothing, life sucks, what am I doing this for? I hate everything. Now there's no work to be found, life sucks, I hate everything, you know, and their attitude has not changed, you know, and the reality is there is still stuff to be found. There is still work to be, you know, in my field too. Granted, it's an adjustment, it's different, but you find ways, if the desire is there, a way will be found. But for a lot of people, they've already made the decision, it's not going to work. And therefore, they've already lost 85% of the battle just in their own head alone. And convincing them otherwise is a very difficult thing, I found. But a lot of you guys have already touched on this, where it's, you got to have an agenda. You got to get out of bed in the morning. You have to have a reason. Even though you're sitting there technically working for in your underwear, whatever the situation might be, you still have a responsibility to your job and to what you're trying to accomplish and your goals. Just because you're doing it from the couch in front of the television with the cat next to you doesn't change the fact that you have a purpose and a reason to basically continue to work.
And this is why we need people like Jeanette, because Jeanette, being a motivational coach, is the person who is going to say to that person who is already struggling with themselves, because the biggest enemy that you have is the one that's here inside your head, mm-hmm. is that, hey, give thanks for the little joys that you have in your life. And you can't sit and say to yourself, nothing is happening, because nothing is going to change until you have changed.
It all starts with mindset. Everything yes. starts with your mindset. If you know, I said before the show, energy flows where focus goes. So if you're focusing on the negative, it's going to go there. I call negative thinking, it's negative goal setting. You know,
this is why many people need to understand that successful people don't just get up and be successful. It starts with the mindset, and you must have a positive mental attitude, which means that you're going to have to feed the mind with positive energy. And so you're going to start your day with something motivational. Even if it's a little tape, your Bible, something, and you say, these are the goals I have set for today. And then you start to find ways. But you know what? Don't worry about finding ways. What is important now is that you put down those goals that you have in mind. Because the moment that those goals are made concrete and you have them on paper, then the universe is going to find a way to bring you all the desires that you want.
And definitely if you have an accountability partner or somebody you're accountable to for your goals, so that you, I mean, there's many ways that we do this in coaching, but if you have to, you know, tell somebody what your goals are, write them down, tell somebody, share them with them, and tell them every day what you're going to be doing. We do the rule of five every day, five steps for our goals. And
yes,
it helps to have someone to share that with. It's not just
I used to do that with myself.
That works.
It's crazy.
Sure, that qualifies as an accountability partner, you know, but we'll figure that out.
Oh my God.
Dion, you, yes, before all of this, you helped businesses operate successfully without the business owner. And that's one of the things as a business consultant I've done as well. I always tell entrepreneurs and business owners, where most of them go wrong is they spend their day putting out fires. You're not supposed to have all these fires. You can have an occasional fire, but if you every day, all day, fire after fire, there's something wrong in your processes, in your procedures. And it is important that someone can step into your business, have the employee manual, have the processes, have the procedures.
Which is why you have to create systems, because if you do not have that, then everything is going to be dependent on you. And what happens to the business if you fall ill, or if you are not there to say this is what you do? So this is why business continuity is so important. So if you are going to have a staff member today, the same procedure that you go through to train that staff and say, these are the functions that you are going to manage while you're within this organization, then naturally you should, and there are many companies out there which do not do this, but you are going to be the one who is going to have to say, okay, let me document this process. Because if something should happen and that employee can't be at work today, then what is going to happen? So you must have systems in place. If you, as a business owner, is running a business and you have no system in place and you always have to be tied to that business, then you have no business. Essentially, you just have a job. So the business can't be successful, because the focus time that you need, not just time, you need focus time to plan and strategize as to how you're going to get to the next level, how you're going to grow this business, or even if it's just you as a self-employed person, how are you going to grow your brand? Because we are all brands within ourselves. So you're going to have to think of next step. And so when you have employees within your business, you need to say to them, I would like for you to do this. And if they do not understand, then you can say, okay, this is how it is done. And I think it was Gretchen who made mention of having steps how to do things, I think. But one of the panelists here had mentioned something similar. And to my mind, that is an excellent idea. You have to have your how-to. And so instead of just making a video, you have to write these things down. Have your how-to, your sequence, and that is a part of your business strategy. And it may not make sense now, but if you want to scale that business and sell that business at some point, you are going to have to say to somebody who's going to walk into that business, and you're going to say, I am selling this business as a going concern. It's a turnkey industry. And these are my encyclopedia, so to speak, my Bible. This is what you're going to do if you're going to run this business as successful or even more than I was doing it. So if someone has a little retail store, it may just seem on the outside to be a retail store, but there are several things that goes into that process to make it into a successful retail store. So you could say to somebody, listen, I am selling you this business. And when that person walks in, they can say, okay, this is her book. These are the things that she used to do. This is how she used to make the sale. This is how she connected with her customers. This is what she does during this time, because then you would have a schedule, your calendar, and you can say, okay, Christmas is coming up and I'm going to start preparing for Christmas in September. And so I am going to send to my supplier in China these are the things from the catalog that I would like to have. And then I'm going to have them here by the end of October, the second week in November, the latest. And so somebody who is just buying the business would not know all of these things. And so they would fail. And then they would turn around and sue you for selling them a business that can go nowhere because you had implemented no system, because you had it all up here in your head. So this is the importance of documenting steps.
I love it. I love it. Gretchen, your thoughts?
Yeah, I see that a lot in corporations, in corporate corporate world. And we call it, well, information is power, right? And companies that don't document well their procedures, people keep it in their head because it keeps you useful and needed. And we call it, you know, companies, there are a lot of companies that just run on tribal knowledge. It's what people know, and it's what they've learned along the way, tips and tricks of doing their job, or someone comes in new to the company, they get paired with someone who's been there a while, so they learn that same tribal knowledge, and it might not be the best processes. So we look a lot, you know, what Dion was saying, you know, companies kind of can be very resistant to document processes. And I kind of fight that a lot when I'm going in and doing the change management work, because I want to see what is current state. What are people, how are people doing the work now? And then we design how are they going to do it with the change. And not many people have current processes documented because it's all up here.
Right. That's very true.
And Dion, I'm with you.
I have had to go to battle with a lot of small business owners for the same thing, because they feel that I am going to lose this book. Now, the situation is, if you have a book, if you are doing things the old-fashioned way, and you have a book with all of your client names in it and their contact number, and you have fear that you're going to lose it, that's why we have Google Docs. And this is one of the reasons why within your office environment, you would have a shutdown, so that your employee cannot steal those valuable data from you. So you can shut down your thumb drive, for instance, so they can't do that. So these are things that I have had to educate small business owners on. And I just have to remember, I just have to remind myself that what I need to say to them, remember, think big, because larger companies do not behave like this. And so when you have company, I mean, this is a part of your IP, intellectual property. And if you are going to be running a small business, it's not going to be small for now. So it may just be you, but to get you to the next level, you're going to have to say, okay, this is my team for now, which are my employees. And so this is how we're going to get to the next level. And if you have employees who are not willing to work with you, then those are people who you do not want within your team, because they're going to sabotage you.
Definitely words to live by. Scott, you have your processes and procedures ready, written down?
I do. I don't do it on paper, because if I do it on paper, I will lose it instantly. Mm-hmm. This was a problem when I was an advisor. My vice president was very, very paper focused. I'm very paperless. You know, I have a mind, I have a brain like a sieve. So whatever, you know, basically I have to write stuff down or else I'm going to forget it instantly. But I focus so heavily on Excel, Google Docs, things like that, that I can draw back from across multiple devices as well. So if the phone's available, laptop's available, whatever it is. But if it's a piece of paper, if I don't take a picture of it, I will lose that piece of paper in no time flat. I don't know where it goes. But, you know, one of the things that I had learned years ago is your strengths, make your strengths great. Make your weaknesses good, and you'll be, you don't have to focus on being great at everything, but find your weaknesses, work around them. You know, in my case, being a I'm being terrible with paper, you know, finding a way to circumvent that, scanning everything. So at least I have it on, you know, the Google Drive. I've got it on, I could retransfer something to myself if I have to keep it safe. There's a few different options that are available. So you find ways to circumvent your weaknesses. But in my particular case, yes, I have very strict systems on everything that I do. You know, the times that I will sit there, you know, this, everything I have on my schedule for today was set up last night, you know, and then reviewed in the morning. You guys probably have a system that's very similar to that, you know, yes. Because that's the kind of thing that if you don't have a structured game plan of doing X, Y, and Z, you will get caught up in things that will keep you from getting where you're trying to go.
But Scott, let me add to that, Scott. You said start planning for today, last night, essentially. Mm-hmm. That's what everybody has to do. But another key component of that is that you have to have the must-have things that mm-hmm. you must accomplish if you are going to be successful today.
Yeah, priorities and things like that. Brian Tracy would talk about that with Focal Point, organizing everything by like an A, B, C, D, E category. Oh,
I'm embarrassed to say that I do not pay attention to him, but thank you, Scott. I will, because I feel as if I'm being left out now.
No,
Janet, what do you think?
Eat that frog first. So do the priorities first, and the things that you really, it's going to be harder to do and you need more focus on, get those done first. Get those five essential things done and then move on.
Oh my God, Janet, you have a five number. Oh my Lord, I'm going to have to start doing five. Monica, do you do five?
I think another great point is, and I've seen this just speaking of documentation and our industry and payments. I mean, when you get into banking, it's like, I don't know, file cabinets and binders with like 2000 page binders. And it's like, is anyone actually going to read that? We know that it's documented, but can we condense, you know, 100 pages down to five bullet points? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we've instituted, and I think it's been incredibly successful, is we have a department, their entire job is to take every single thing that has been written for training, because we experience lots of change, and just condense, make it concise, draw pictures, diagrams, workflows, because it should be that, you know, a five-year-old could look at this and actually understand what to do. You know, we just have so much information to consume that, and then always follow that same exact format for all the documentation, because it's going to help anybody in your organization get trained even faster, because they recognize a format, they know exactly how to read it, and it's building blocks.
Yes, wonderful. Training, I believe, is the most important, one of the most important aspects, but I also believe it's where most small businesses, not small to medium, but small businesses go wrong, because they do not have training for their employees. What typically happens is we do the whole trial by fire, where we hire them, we throw them in the position. If they don't mess it up too bad, they get to keep their job, as opposed to training them. This is what and that's the importance of documentation, is because any employee, and again, I think Dion mentioned it, the whole watch what the big boys do. McDonald's is a perfect example. When you go to McDonald's University, they want you and every McDonald's to make their fries the exact same way, the cheeseburgers the exact same way, but they have to be trained so somebody doesn't come in and try to figure out what is the McDonald's way. And many small businesses don't even know what their way is in order to be able to implement it. Now, I've enjoyed myself. I've learned a lot. I've taken a lot of mental notes on this show. It's definitely been a pleasure. We are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests a few minutes to speak directly to everyone who's watching this show live, as well as anyone who's watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance. And I'm going to go ahead and start with Jeanette.
I have a compilation book coming out called Women Who Rise on May 7th with 29 other inspirational authors. And what's happening in the world right now is unprecedented. We're not used to it, but we can all rise together to figure out a solution and move through this process. And so I think this is an opportunity for us. Yes, it's sad and a lot of bad things are going on, but let's focus on how we can rise together.
Where can people purchase that book on May 7th?
They can contact me and we will have a link that comes out on May 7th. It will be on Amazon. It's okay. Part of the Inspired Impact series. So it's a number one best-selling series with 29 other inspirational stories plus mine.
Oh, that is wonderful. Definitely have to check that out. And people can visit, I'm sure your contact information is on your website, which is in the description for this live. And you know, because we want people to line up. So on May 7th, You already have those sales. You already have people waiting. That's our ideal goal for you. Scott, what do you have for us?
Okay. I will say this. Life is 10%. So. My wife just went to the bathroom. I'm sorry about that.
Thank you for sharing.
Life is 10% what happens to you, 90% how you deal with it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think problems that happen right now is so many people are so focused on what's happening, they don't realize how they can persevere from it. Now, I told you guys before the show that I have lost three people to mm-hmm. Corona in 2 weeks. And, and the oldest one was 61 years old. So is it going to beat me? Hell no. This is something, like I said, we grow, we get tougher, we get better. You know, we have a purpose. My wife and I had this production company, Purple Unicorn Productions. I'm continuing to do stuff with people on the West Coast. You know, things are still out there. Things are still being done. We can still grow and achieve despite the circumstances. Something like this gives us a unique opportunity to, I'm going to say kick us in the teeth a little bit, but at the same time, give us a chance to become tougher from it, to draw back when the next challenge shows up in life. We can look back on 2020 and say, we've got through that. And then use this as fuel to say, I get through the, you know, I can get through the next challenge and the next challenge and the next challenge, because that's what life is. Looking back at the past to realize you're tough enough for the future.
I love that. That was beautiful. I was waiting for the cliches, the in time, this too shall pass.
I gave you life is 10% what happens. You know, that was Charles Swindoll right there.
I missed that.
Viktor Frankl, let's see, what last the true human freedoms is the right to choose one's attitude in any given situation. So there's another one for you.
Dion, what do you have for us? You're on mute, Dion. We have to get those words in from Dion.
Yes. Excuse me. I just want to say, for those that are struggling or feeling hopeless, connect with me. I'm on dionmorrison.com. Let me help you to find a way to grow and succeed and thrive throughout all of this and come out better on the other side.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Someone who's, as we all are, offering our assistance. Gretchen.
Oh, you know, I think what I want to say to people is, number one, just breathe. Mm-hmm. You know, just breathe and take a moment. This is a very stressful time. It can be very frightening if you choose to let it be frightening, and you can get sucked into all that negativity. And with what Jeanette has said a few times during this is basically what you think you attract. So just breathe through. And I want to say, be kind to yourself and be kind to others. And be patient. And if you are in the corporate world and you need help with how to manage things remotely, you can find me. I'll be happy to jump on a phone call or video call with anyone at theessentialceo.com. And hopefully, maybe some of the videos I've done there can help you, as well as, you know, we are all figuring out, you know, this fast change we've had to adjust to.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and your videos are under free resources, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you for that. Again, we're all here to help. We're here to share our expertise. But I just wanted to ask you, I know you mentioned you work with a lot of Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies. Are you able to consult with small to medium-sized business owners as well?
Probably medium-sized businesses. Not small.
We're not looking for the one-man shop, but people with teams of employees that are looking for ways to get through this situation. Thank you for that, Gretchen. Monica, what do you have for us?
So I think my message is for anybody that is an entrepreneur or they have a business, but also for employees that, you know, they may feel like, okay, I'm an extra resource and I just have a 9-to-5 job at home. Now is actually an opportunity for you to make a real difference, because every business owner is depending on every single resource more than ever. And instead of putting ourselves in an environment where it feels like despair, let's actually covet the fact that, you know, the most amazing inventions the most amazing innovation has actually resulted from havoc, chaos, and challenge. And mm-hmm. we have a lot of opportunity in front of us. There's opportunity for businesses to pivot, to come up with solutions that, you know, to solve problems that have never been there. There's opportunities for us to raise the bar, extend limits that we never thought that we could ever get to. And I think, you know, challenging our perspective, focusing on things that matter most, is really, you know, take all of that and figure out how you can actually overcome it and succeed. And then lastly, you know, definitely rely on, I think, you know, one really humbling thing about this crisis is it just underscores just the importance and, you know, how wonderful it is, just humanity and just human nature. And you hear about all of these amazing stories and people helping each other. And I think, you know, in the business world, sometimes, you know, we get a little cold and we have competitors and there's a lot of angst. I think all of that is kind of going away because now we have such common threads. We share the same common enemy. And I think, you know, that is going to create even more opportunity to work together in ways that we've never thought were possible before. And that's going to really help us, you know, put the economy back together and make sure that we're sustainable both as individuals and as businesses.
I love it. That was words to live by. It was so positive. I think that's the message that everyone has brought as guests on the show. How can we connect? How can we connect with each other? We made a connection with you and Gretchen this morning. Got to work on that partnership, get you guys working together. But we're all here to help each other. So I want to thank you all for being a guest on Thursday's episode of The Roundtable.
Thank you.
You are so welcome. And I definitely have to thank everyone who has watched this show live and everyone who's watching it in the archives. Our guests are amazing. They're all here to help you. Visit their websites. Their website links, along with their bio, is in the description. Check them out. Go visit them. See what they can do. They're offering free resources as well as a new book that's coming out. So check them out. And if you are interested in being a guest on the Roundtable, please visit the website at asharifa.com. We'll be back for Friday's episode, which I call TGIF, the Roundtable, right? Because thank God it's Friday. It's been an emotional week. But visit the website. Visit our guests, and everyone have a blessed day and stay safe. Bye now.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.